life without hope. Now that's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It means hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, Captain Nostalgia, and this has been a long time coming, but we got something amazing for you. He did it over on his show. I got to join the conversations. We're bringing the amazing Spider-Man 2 to Victims and Villains. And please help me in welcoming from the Superhero Movie Cast, the show where we took part one from. Go check it out if you guys haven't checked it out already. Mr. Thomas Olson.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me back on your show.
It's good to be back. It's good to have you back. It's been a while.
It's been like a couple months, man. So excited to be back.
I was like, I need to get Thomas back on the show.
Yeah. So I'm excited. Yeah, we just had a good chat, good time chatting Amazing Spider-Man. So I'm excited to continue the conversation.
So tell us a little bit about kind of a refresher for maybe either new listeners or returning listeners. What is Superhero Movie Cast?
So Superhero Movie Cast is a podcast where basically it's just me and some friends. We chat about superhero films specifically, but we try to talk about some of the inspiring themes of the movies, things that, you know, try to go a little bit deeper into what some of the themes of the movies are, whether that's stuff the directors and producers were trying to convey, or maybe just other things that stood out to us as we were, maybe there was something in our lives that we're struggling with or that we're thinking about. And we try to dive deep into some of those themes as well as geeking out over superhero films. It's a good time. It's just, like I said, me and friends chatting superhero films. It's a lot of fun. We just got done chatting about the first Amazing Spider-Man movie. And so I'm excited to continue that conversation over here now.
And he is not lying when he talked about friends. So we had to keep it consistent here. Please help me in welcoming from our Amazing Spider-Man episode with Superhero Movie Cast, Mr. Tim Chaplin. What's up, man?
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So you are the, I believe that you're like the leading expert for Spider-Man when it comes to Superhero Movie Cast.
Yeah. I like Spider-Man, and I've been on all those episodes except for Spider-Man 2. I let better men, take care of that episode for me, but I took care of Spider-Man 3, and now we're doing Amazing Spider-Man, and it's been really fun.
He did. He stood up to the plate. Jumped on Spider-Man 3 when we covered that, so I appreciate it.
God bless you, man.
Yeah, appreciate that.
Someone had to do that one.
Yeah,
that's right.
Talk about sacrifice.
I know. What's funny, I actually had a pretty decent amount of interest in that episode, so it wasn't too hard to fill like I was thinking it would be. But
well, we did have a lot to say, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I always feel like films like that, like you can always have a lot to say about, like, films that notoriously have like a bad rap or like any sort of reputation. Like they're always the films that I feel like I want to cover. So like if we ever cover a film that's like really bad, I feel like I have a lot to say about it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, Josh, you came on. We covered Batman Robin a month or two ago, and I had like six people reach out to me, say, "Hey, I want to be on." And I think I ended up having to keep it to, we had a full house. We had four people chatting about it, and I think we had a good conversation. So yeah,
that was a really fun episode just for me to listen to, actually. So it just goes to show, it can be a bad movie, but a great podcast episode.
Yeah, true, that should be like true. The slogan: bad movie, great podcast episode.
Get it printed on like T-shirts and stuff.
Yeah.
So what is it about Spider-Man that makes you fall in love with him for you personally?
So I think for me, like growing up, I was a really shy, pretty like insecure kid. And so I was just really drawn to like Peter Parker being that way on one side, and then the other side being in costume, being confident, being funny, beating up bad guys. And so, yeah, that just, I feel like all of us can have both those sides to us where we, you know, we feel like we're not enough, or we may not be who we want to be, but we know who we want to be. And when Peter Parker's in that costume, he feels a lot more comfortable being that way. And so I've just always thought that was really interesting.
Cool. I was just kind of curious. Like, so my follow-up question is, like, was we talked a little bit about comics on Thomas's show, but, like, what is your favorite comic arc of Spider-Man and why?
That's a good question. I'm going to try to be really concise. So I did a podcast about comics with Thomas on one of his other episodes, and I talked about Spider-Man Blue by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale.
Great guys.
If I'm being really honest, though, I really love the Ultimate Spider-Man series. And like the first 12 issues, it's like a kind of reboot retelling of his origin. It's kind of drawn out, but it's really well done, and I just love that.
I bought a graphic novel of Spider-Man's like forever ago from the Ultimate series, and I still haven't read it yet. It's the one where they reintroduce Silver Sable. I'm a huge Silver Sable fan.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think that's like volume like 7 or 8 or something. So, but yeah, it's a long series, but it's way consistent.
Yeah. All right. So, let's talk some Amazing Spider-Man 2. So, there it is.
Sorry, I was just showing my Spider-Man.
Yeah,
blue.
That's so shiny and beautiful.
I haven't been able to restart reading it yet, but I've got it on my bed table, so soon.
It's on the to-do list.
Yeah.
All right, so before we get into talking about Amazing Spider-Man 2, just to let you guys know, if you guys are not big Spider-Man fans, more into something a little bit like the horror. Today we also released our episode on Constantine City of Demons, if you guys want to check that out, with Blaine McLaren as well. But I am going to get to, we're going to jump into talking general thoughts here. So, Tim, since you have never been on our show before, what is your general thoughts on Amazing Spider-Man 2? No spoilers.
All right, so no spoilers. So on Thomas's episode, I mentioned I really, really love Amazing Spider-Man 1. I think Amazing Spider-Man 2 is pretty good. I don't love it as much as the first one. I feel like it's a lot more inconsistent, where there's a lot of really amazing, beautiful, awesome scenes or parts, and then there are other scenes and parts that feel really awkward or just kind of corny to me. And so, yeah, that's what always comes back to me. I like it. I appreciate it a little bit more now than when I first saw it. But yeah, that's how I feel.
Thomas, what about you, bro?
Oh man, I have such a mixed emotions about this movie, because there's things about this movie that I absolutely love. Like I think to me, it has some of the best superhero movie moments in it. I know that's a bold statement, but I really do. I think it's super strong. It's really strong in moments, but then it's got other moments that are just like, what? Why are you doing that? Why? Like, what? I don't know. Just there's some, like Tim said, some really corny moments, some goofy moments, some clunky stuff. But at the end of the day, the movie is a bit inconsistent. They try to do too much. They fell into the Spider-Man 3 trap of... And I think what was happening, if you look back about this movie, came out in 2014, so Avengers came out 2 years before it. Marvel Cinematic Universe is just booming. You know, they're still getting going on their cinematic universe, but it's, you know, Captain America Winter Soldier just came out. You also had X-Men Days of Future Past coming out that year, which was also a huge boost for the X-Men Fox universe at the time. And this movie, I felt like they were trying to do too much too soon of building this Spider-Man cinematic universe, which I think, honestly, I don't have a problem with that. I think that's actually a good idea, because there's a lot you could do with Spider-Man. And I was super excited for Sinister Six, the talks they had and stuff like that. But this movie just tried to do a little bit too much. And because of that, the overall product suffers. But with that said, I still enjoy, like, I actually enjoy going back and watching this movie. I revisit it more than the first Amazing Spider-Man film. And out of a lot of the Spider-Man movies, I go back and revisit this one maybe more than some. So I do really enjoy it, but it is a bit disappointing just because it doesn't come together like I think it could have.
Yeah, so like I'm actually gonna, like, my general thoughts are summed up into one specific scene of this movie. And like it's in the last climax of the battle where it's Spider-Man versus Green Goblin, who's trying to stop Green Goblin from getting, he's trying to stop him from getting his blood, but he's also trying to hold on to Gwen, and he's trying to stop the clock tower from running, and he's got like four different things going on at once within a 2-minute period, and that's how that just sets the tone for this film. There's so much going on here, and it's so distracting, which is really sad because Jamie Foxx is so good in this movie. And we're going to get into this on the other side of the commercial break, but this film is just so busy that your final film suffers. It kind of almost feels like, in essence, they were trying to map out how to do one of the Netflix shows before the Netflix shows were a thing.
Interesting, yeah. They from what I understand, they cut out a lot of it too. So
right.
I don't even know what was going on, like, with the full cut of it.
And it's still, I think, the longest Spider-Man movie ever. Like, it's 2.5-hour movie. Like, it's
I think Homecoming is just a few minutes longer.
Oh,
technically
really?
Speaking, okay. Yeah.
I guess maybe at the time, then I know it's. The movie doesn't drag, though. It doesn't feel long. I mean, it zips along, mm-hmm. and you're interested in what's happening. It's just, but then at times, though, it's like one moment you're doing this, you know, Peter's chasing down stuff about his parents, and the next moment you got this going on with Harry or whatever, and it is, sometimes they don't quite connect the way they should.
Mm-mm. And like going on your show and talking about Batman and Robin, that's what this film suffers from. It suffers from so many story arcs kind of going on at once, but they spend enough time to develop each story arc, and you're entertained the entire time you're going. It's not necessarily a good film, but it's a film that you can still enjoy and like sit down and just watch over and over again.
Yeah, I think the difference though with this and Batman and Robin is that. Batman
There's
and Robin.
No ice puns.
Maybe there should have been. Maybe that's what this movie's missing, is some great ice puns. But I think, though, this movie, you can actually take this movie serious, though. Whereas Batman and Robin, there's not really any moment in that. Well, maybe like the Alfred moment, like we talked about on my show. But like overall, you can't. This movie, there's at least you can still feel the weight of some of the things that happen in this film, like the emotion behind it. And that's what I appreciate about it. At the end of the day, whether, you know, even though it's not a great, it could have been a great Spider-Man film, it's not, but it still has great moments, and I still appreciate it for that.
Yes. All right. Yeah. So we're going to get ready to jump into some spoilers. And before we get there, we're going to take a quick commercial break. But even more importantly, if you or someone you know is listening to this and you are struggling with suicide, depression, self-harm, or addiction, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 123 suicides that take place each and every day right here in our own backyard. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That's one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, please reach out. This is the heart of why we do the things that we do, the content that we release, whether it's a YouTube, written, or audio. And even crossovers, is we want you guys to know that there is hope and that there is a better tomorrow. And so you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope, where you guys will find resources like our social media, the Suicide Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255, the text line 741-741, and even more resources to get you guys connected with churches and counselors to get you guys the hope and the help that we know and believe is possible for you guys. And so with that, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back.
The Amazing Spider-Man. I wish I was like him.
Peter Parker.
Harry Osborn.
You want Spider-Man. And I can give him to you.
Let's go catch a spider.
Soon everyone you love will be a target.
You want to fight? Fight me!
The Amazing Spider-Man 2, rated PG-13, in Real D3D and IMAX 3D.
Welcome back, and it is my birthday, so I'm gonna blow off some candles. Best line in the whole movie. Anyways, we're jumping into and when the candles go out, the spoilers come. So just so you guys know, we're entering into spoiler cake territory. Now I really want some cake. So I'm gonna open this up, and first thing I want to talk about is, starting right at the beginning, this is kind of, I think, one of the only, maybe outside of Age of Ultron, this is one of the first films in the modern comic book movie age that genuinely feels like a comic book, because a lot of the times we don't kind of get these opening sequences with like side villains. So like this one gave us, it opened and it closed with Rhino. And you just kind of see that, you kind of see like what happens in between like these big bads of this cinema universe. And so I kind of really respect that about this film. It's part of the reason that it feels sloppy, but it's one of the things that I really admire most about it, is it feels like a genuine comic book. Thomas, what do you think about the kind of that layer to this film?
I actually really like that. I think it's cool that they open up with this little mini chase scene with Rhino, and then you get a quick shot of him again at the end. I don't have a problem with that at all. I think that's actually pretty cool. Like how you said, is that it's just this little mini thing. It doesn't necessarily have to do anything with the overall story. You know, this kind of cold opening, and then they call back to it at the end. I think it's pretty cool. And I don't necessarily love like the mechanical robot Rhino suit at the end. I would have preferred a more traditional Rhino like we get in the comics, but
modernizing it, bro.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I understand like that's a hard character to do, but I would have preferred something more classical. But I don't, the idea of it though, I think is cool. I think it's actually, and it's a great, the scene though at the end actually plays really well into like the theme of the movie, of Peter kind of gaining hope again and kind of taking on the mantle of Spider-Man once again. So I like it overall. But maybe the execution isn't the greatest, but overall I like it.
Tim, what about you, man?
When you just explaining it like that made me like, yeah, that's actually pretty cool. It makes me appreciate it more. The first movie, they try and be a lot more grounded, and this one they're like, this is Spider-Man, these are supervillains, everything is more colorful, let's do this. And so that, I think that is admirable, and I think we can all agree that's not necessarily the issue of the movie.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
you go.
I was just going to say, I want to say off the bat, I think this is the best Spider-Man costume in any of the films.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love it.
It looks so good. And I like how, like, in that opening shot of him just free falling, and like you see the wind kind of flapping in it a bit, like they give it that texture, and it looks so good.
That is like my favorite scene of the whole movie, is like that first like 10 seconds or something of just him falling. It looks so good.
It is. It's great.
Agreed. I don't know, like it always kind of bothered me on the big, like I think it's a cool shot, but I don't know why, like the, just like the little ruffles that bothered me. I don't know why.
The devil's in the details.
I guess the ruffles are for everybody.
I mean, I didn't mind it. Like it's not, again, it's not gonna say that it breaks this movie for me, because it clearly doesn't.
Yeah.
But I'm going to take a couple minutes and read this, because I think this is probably one of the earlier scenes in the film. And this is being kind of this moment of, I think it's a great overtone to kind of talk about not only setting the stage for the film, but also at the same time, also kind of having an overlay with some of the transitional period between, you know, Spider-Man kind of winding down on catching the Rhino and then kind of coming to graduation. And this is Gwen Stacy's valedictorian speech, which is really great. She says, "I know we all think we're mortal. We're supposed to feel that way. We're graduating. The future is and should be bright. But like our brief 4 years in high school, what makes life valuable is that it doesn't last forever. What makes it precious is that it ends. I know that now more than ever. And I say today, on today of all days, to remind us that time is luck. So don't waste it living someone else's life. Make your life count for something. Fight for what matters to you, no matter what. Because even if you fall short, what better way is there to live? It is easier to feel hopeful on a beautiful day like today. But there will be dark days ahead of us too. And there will be days where you feel all alone. But that's when hope is most needed. Keep it alive, no matter how buried it gets or lost you feel. You must promise me that you will hold on to hope and keep it alive. We have to be greater than what we suffer. My wish for you is to become hope. People need that. And I know it feels like we're saying goodbye, but we will carry on each other, and we will carry a piece of each other into everything we do next to remind us of who we are and what we're meant to be. I've had a great 4 years with you, and I'll miss you all very much." So kind of just some of the themes that she addresses in this, being a podcast that marries suicide prevention with pop culture, I feel like this is such a brief and, I don't want to say insignificant moment in this, but just a lot of what she says in this just be about being hope and kind of taking that out of the film and kind of bringing it into practicality and just really practicing this in everyday life. Like, I mean, what does something like this scene speak to you guys?
I've got kind of two random thoughts. The first thought is that this is just like a lot of foreshadowing with what happens with her dying, and you know, it literally like being rainy on her funeral. And I guess I never realized that until I was listening to you do that now. But when I look at my life, I've shared a little bit about my life briefly on Thomas's podcast. But I was I got married for the first time in 2010, and then we were married for 6 years, and then, you know, for various reasons, just decided to get a divorce. And so that was a very, as you can imagine, like really hard and depressing time for me. And I kind of feel compelled to bring that up because I got remarried almost 5 months ago. And it's so interesting, like, to look back on that, on those like really dark and depressing moments in my life and be really grateful for those moments. And to say like those moments were these stepping stones that helped me kind of pave this way to become this person that I am now and to find my current wife and my wife now will say like, you being divorced, I forget how she says it, but like the things you learn from being divorced, like make me love you even more. And I think it just goes to show like we can have these really depressing and hard moments in our life. But when we kind of get through it all and when we can look back on it, we can be really grateful and I don't, you know, it happened the way it did and I'm glad that it did, even though it sucked.
Good.
Yeah. I don't know if I could follow up with that. That was awesome, dude. Thanks for sharing that. But I really like this speech too, Josh. I'm glad you like took the time to like read it word for word, because I think it's really there's some really powerful stuff in there. And I remember, like you said, Tim, there's definitely foreshadowing, especially you see in the beginning. But then at the end, when Peter plays the end of it, that's kind of the thing that kind of like helps jolt him back into having hope again. I mean, literally, like he loses hope for a little while. And I mean, rightfully so, he lost the woman he loved. Like, he watched her die, and it died because of his own web. Like, I mean, obviously, like, he was trying to save her. A goblin would have killed her regardless, but still to live with that would be really hard. But I like the line she says of, we have to be greater than our suffering. And that's a hard thing to do, but it is something that is realistic. I think we can rise to that. We can become greater than our suffering, and our suffering and our trials and everything become part of who we are. We don't forget them. We don't try to bury them away. But like Tim said, and like your wife mentioned, like, the thing she loves about you is because of what you learned through your divorce. Like, yeah, that was a terrible thing that happened to you, but you've been able to find some beauty from it and form this new relationship. And I think that's really powerful. And that's what I really like about this movie, is that it conveys that message that even despite our darkest days, there's still hope. Like, we can still hope again. It could be really hard, but we can still get to that place.
Yeah, I love the fact that she even, you know, essentially, you know, talks about how short, because you keep in mind that this isn't just a girl that is speaking to a class of graduating students, kind of talking about their views on mortality. But this is a girl that has just recently lost her father. So she's seen firsthand how precious life really is. And also having a boyfriend that just lost his essential father figure as well, like that bonding experience. And, you know, I think one of the biggest, I don't have many regrets in my life, but I feel like a lot of maybe my regret is that I don't keep in touch with a lot of the guys and girls that I went to high school with, because I wasn't a very hopeful person. Now being a mental health advocate, like, and, you know, she says, you know, my hope is that you would become hope in someone's darkest day. Like, being a man of God, like, that's what I live for. Like, I live for those little moments. Like, I love being able to go to conventions or go to work or push record on this podcast and just speak about hope, is because hope is a concept. And when you're going through those darkest days, hope is something that feels so far away that it feels like every time you step towards it, it goes further away. Kind of like in those like horror films where you kind of like you're looking for the escape, and the more you keep walking towards it. But it's one of those things that if you flip the script and really focus on the things that can bring you hope now in your dark days, those dark days don't seem so dark anymore.
Yeah. So, and I think to go along with that, this movie, there's like a theme of time. Of you're always kind of like, the characters are always wishing they had more time. And the movie literally starts with Peter's father's clock. Like, you see the workings of the inner, like what the clock looks like, and it zooms out and it's his watch. And then the movie, the final battle is the Harry and Peter in a clock tower fighting over, you know, he's trying to save Gwen and everything. And I think that is just kind of really great, because this movie, like, throughout the movie, Peter also is like, Gwen's trying to move, she's going to move away, and he's like afraid he's not going to have time with her. And it's just a great reminder to take the time we have to enjoy the people in our lives, the things we have, because you really never know how much time you're going to have together, you know. And it's, I have a new baby, she'll be a year next month. And that has been a huge eye-opener and reminder to me about like how fast time goes, because she grows every single day. And I have to always just like look back and like, holy crap, I need to make sure I'm enjoying this, because she's not going to be a little baby again. So I think this film kind of captures that message really well.
Yeah. So one thing that I really want to talk about before we kind of move on is, like, look, normally we save it for the end of the show, but I kind of just feel like it's right opportunity moment right now. Is like, if you guys need those resources, again, victimsandvillains.net/hope, because I'm telling you, you can have that tomorrow. Like, depression and suicide and anxiety, they don't have to be your untimely death. They don't have to be your untimely end. So please reach out, start the conversation. But I feel like another thing that this film captures really well is kind of keeping with the theme of mental health, kind of having this like villain with Electro. I really, really liked Jamie Foxx in Electro. I feel like even before he kind of goes through his like transformation of like being like this like super fan, Lone Star, like this like Superman, or this wrong film franchise. he goes through this like whole like super fan Spider-Man phase, and like he's a loner and like no one likes him, and he's a ghost essentially, as they refer to him in this movie. So, but I mean, just kind of like even his arc throughout, like, what'd you guys think of his arc throughout the course of this?
So he's hit or miss for me. I like what they're trying to do, making this loner, this like, yeah, this kind of just like invisible type guy, but I think the execution is not the greatest. Like, it's to me, that's where it's like, there's some really corny, goofy stuff, like him making his own birthday cake and talking to Spider-Man while he's shaving, and just like, I don't know, like I don't love that stuff about it. But I think one of my favorite scenes of his is when he's in Times Square, which, by the way, that's such a fantastic like looking scene of them. They shot, I don't know if they shot it in Times Square, I would think they maybe did some of it, but it's just a great action sequence.
Yeah,
but that part's really great, as he, like, the transition of him like feeling he's getting all this attention, and all of a sudden Spider-Man shows up and basically steals the attention, and him just like losing it. And I know a lot of people bash the score of this film.
Oh, I actually really like it.
I really like the soundtrack to this movie, actually. It's awesome.
And I think it's cool how they like put the words to almost like what he's thinking in the score. And so you kind of get that as in that sequence, as he's like seeing all the, like the TVs with Spider-Man, and he just is like losing his, and he's just like, I'm like freaking sick of this, you know, like no one gives me the time of day. And he just like lashes out. And so I think it's a messy start, but where they get to with him, I really like. And I think Jamie Foxx does a good job at like that part of it.
I like Jamie Foxx a lot of the time, like in movies that he does. And I'm definitely with Thomas on this. It's hit or miss. His character is very reminiscent of Edward Nygma from Batman Forever. And I know you guys love that movie. However, I don't love that character. It's just this like this really smart, goofy guy that loves the hero and then goes against them. But what I do like just kind of that picture they paint of who he is. And when I first saw this movie, I was like, man, I don't think that's very realistic. Like I don't know anyone whose mom would forget, you know, their kid's birthday. But now with the job that I have, I know a lot of people who unfortunately like have a life like that, you know, they don't have a lot of support. They don't have people to connect with. The people that should love them most aren't there for them, or in some unfortunate cases are even the ones that are abusive towards them. And so, my experience with work has okay, this is more than that. So interesting to see like that start where he is, and that you have you to when he meets Harry, and when Harry Osborn is like, hey, I just want to be your friend, and he's manipulating him, but you can see how that would work, because he just wants people to care about him. So the first person that at least pretends like it, he's gonna be like, you know, he's gonna be like a dog with them and just follow them around.
I had a friend once. It didn't work out. I think one of the coolest things about Electro is the sequence, like, after he's, like, unleashed from Ravencroft, but he's still in Ravencroft, and he, like, as Honest Trailers puts it, he essentially Dr. Manhattan's himself and, like, goes and just kind of disappears and then reappears. And then I kind of wish that they would have, like, explained a little bit more about that, but, like, I feel like that's definitely some of the inconsistencies you guys were talking about, because, like, if he would have done that, that would have made him a more formidable villain. Like, the ending, like, towards the end, between, like, him and Spider-Man and the power grid, I love. That's one of the coolest sequences in the film. I love the action kind of and the theatrics of that and just the beauty of it, because it's, like, it's such a beautiful thing. And when it's accompanied by the score as well, it's such an excellent sequence.
Yeah, that is a really great action sequence. I don't love the itsy bitsy spider part of it, but
that's one of those things we're talking about where it's like, why is that in there?
It's like, why do they need to put that in there? But besides that, it's really great. And I like how Gwen helps Spider-Man figure out the magnetizing thing of his web shooters to, like, you know, use that as a, like, against Electro. I think that's a really cool action sequence, and then transitions well into when Harry shows up. And I just remember the first time I saw it, because I knew they were doing the death of Gwen Stacy storyline. You know, like, it was obvious they were going to go that way. But when Harry shows up, my heart just, like, started pounding out of my chest. Like, and even to this day, when I still watch it, it's just like, oh man, like, it's, you know, it's coming, you know, she's going to die. But they, like, they execute that, like, sense of dread really well. Like, that you just, she's going to die. You know, it's, you feel that emotion there. And I like when Peter, when she shows up and he's just like, what are you doing here? And he, like, freaks out at her. Like, that to me goes along again. Andrew Garfield's just, like, acting ability. Like, he makes you feel like he knows this is, like, serious. She needs to get out of here. And so, yeah, I really like the whole ending action sequence.
That's one, like, I see, I'm gonna go opposite of you. That's probably one of the most cringeworthy moments to me in the whole movie, with him and her going back and forth, with, you know, him saying you shouldn't be here, like, and them kind of fighting, and then Harry shows up. Like, that to me, like, every time I watch it, like, it's just such a hard scene to kind of get through, because, like, I love the sequences that come after it, especially with, like, the little kid and the rhino. But that's such one of the hardest scenes to get through for me.
Like, is the actual fight scene and her death hard for you to get through too?
No, it's just the back and forth. Like, all right, so I get a lot of flack for being a Batman versus Superman fan. And a lot of people say that we hadn't earned the death of Superman storyline for that film. I kind of think the same here. Like, I feel like I could be wrong, Tim, you can correct me, but Gwen Stacy was probably in publication for a while when they decided to kill her off, and we got to know her for two films. Like, it would have been it's one of those things, it's like, if you would have killed her off in the third film, saved Green Goblin for the third film, you could have built him up, and then when you're expanding the universe after a trilogy, you can bring in Mary Jane. Like, it just didn't feel earned for this film's franchise.
I think you're probably right. I think that they probably should have. But looking back, or at least maybe they should have either waited, or they should have committed probably to Harry being the central villain. Because I agree, I think it is kind of, to me, the awkward part is, like, when Harry shows up and they're like, oh, you're Peter, you know, and then Harry, like, just kind of, like, figures it out real fast, and then he kind of grabs her. Like, that part is a little clunky, but once they get going and the fighting, I think it's really good. So, but my point is, though, had they committed maybe to, like, Harry being the villain, where like they had encountered Harry before in the film, this scene might have worked better. But knowing that we only got two movies, I'm glad they did it, because the way that I think I attribute this to Andrew Garfield's acting and also to Mark Webb's direction. The actual death of Gwen Stacy, they do, to me at least, I think they do a really good job at making you feel like that emotion. Like, and Andrew Garfield, his performance when he finds her dead is just incredibly like heartbreaking for me. Like, I feel that really. And so I agree with you at the same time, though, where it's like, it wasn't quite earned yet, but the direction of the scene and Andrew Garfield's performance still makes me feel the impact of it. And to me, I mentioned that there's some really great scenes in the movie, and this is one that I would put in one of the greatest superhero scenes, because it captures an iconic moment from the comics and to me captures the emotion of it really well. I mean, whether or not it's placed right, that's I there's debate for that, but as far as the execution, I thought it worked.
I'm Tim, you got anything to add?
So I have to make a confession, I did not rewatch this movie for this episode, so I'm a little bit spacing on how I felt about it. I think Andrew Garfield does really good acting in when someone he loves dies, like when Uncle Ben dies in the first one. I thought that scene was also awesome. I like the way Green Goblin looks more in this movie than the other Spider-Man movies.
I agree with that.
So that's good. I see the face you're making, Josh.
Oh, I'm going to disagree.
It's not great. It's still not great, but it's better than I think what the Power Rangers costume in the first Spider-Man.
It's like his actual face and not the helmet thing.
Yeah, see, I enjoyed the way that like Willem Dafoe looked in the first film. I think that during the last the last confrontation between him and Spider-Man in the first one, he looks ridiculous without it off. But it like the duality, like I liked the duality of it a little bit better in that one. But this, like the look of him in this one, like I kind of think he looks ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree that William Dafoe is a much, much, much better Green Goblin. Just his look in the costume, I don't love the costume they gave him. But I think to me, like this, I guess the reason I'm okay with it is because to me it's almost like an in between. I feel like they were trying to show the progression of him, and I think Dane DeHaan, is that the character's actor's name?
Yeah.
I know a lot of people don't like him, but I actually really like him as Harry. I think he's like he's incredibly creepy, he's incredibly insecure, and he's just this awkward personality that I think fits what Harry Osborn is. I think they were on to some good casting with him, but yeah, it's the execution is hit or miss though.
I really enjoyed Dane DeHaan as a green, like as the character of Harry, but to say that he is a good Green Goblin, that is like trying to compare Jack Nicholson to Jared Leto when it comes to the Joker. Like, there's not enough of screen time to kind of really see what he could have done, and that's what I kind of agree that he should have been a centralized villain.
Yeah.
But I like that they gave us Electro, because Electro is a villain we hadn't really experienced. I like that these newer films that they're trying to give us more of his rogues gallery that we haven't experienced yet. I love the fact that you're getting ready to I loved Michael Keaton as the vulture.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. And then I love that you're getting ready to have Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio. So like I don't know. Like, I feel like we didn't really get enough of him, but like his laugh alone, like, and his kind of like crazy descent, like Dane DeHaan turned in a really fantastic performance in Chronicle and a lot of the other stuff that I've seen him in. Like, he can do good performances, but I just feel like he completely Leto-ized the Green Goblin.
Yeah, that's a fair comparison. I don't disagree. I think he leaves a little bit more of an impact than Jared Leto did, in my opinion. But and that's more just as Harry Osborn, not necessarily as the Green Goblin.
Mm. Harry Osborn. Sure.
I think he leaves more of an impact. But yeah, his Green Goblin, there's still a bit to still some there's we didn't see enough of the Green Goblin, yeah.
And they rushed it. They rushed it so much because it's like it feels like in one scene like here he's completely normal, then he's like obsessed with Spider-Man, and then he's all of a sudden he's Green Goblin. Like it feels so rushed, like there's no progression for his character, no development. It's like the studio kind of did what they did with Spider-Man 3, was like, well, we already have this villain, but it has to be, we need Venom in this. The studio's kind of like, oh, we need Green Goblin in this.
Right.
It's pretty painful, like, how many similarities there are between Spider-Man 3 and this one in terms of, like, what the studio wanted to do and how that affected the end product.
Right, yeah.
There was this, like you guys were saying, there's so much competition with the MCU that they just wanted to shoehorn and all this stuff so bad so that they could compete.
Mm, it's sad. But yeah. I think another thing that comes out of the first film that carries into this film is the psychological battle that he kind of goes through within maybe like the first like 45 minutes about seeing Captain Stacy's ghosts everywhere. How do you guys kind of feel about that? Because I actually have an interesting tidbit about a canceled sequel with this. So, Tim, what do you think about how they handled a little bit of the psychology of Peter and Captain Stacy?
I think it was cool that there's this almost PTSD, like, I should have done this. I should have helped him. I should have been there. And it's haunting him. I thought it was pretty well done and pretty interesting. Probably not as well explored as it could be, but what is in this movie?
Yeah. I like it. I mean, I think I would say pretty much the same thing as Tim. Like it's good. Maybe they could have done a little bit more with it, but I like that it leads into him kind of breaking up with Gwen, or she actually breaks up with him. Sorry, she makes that clear. But and then the movie is kind of, but the, I don't know. At the same time, kind of torn. I kind of wish would have just had them together and not broken up, because I mean it does make the death a little bit more impactful. But like that scene when they meet up to get ice cream. And they're kind of like flirting with each other. Like they have such good chemistry that like, they're just like, so, I don't know, like this is going to sound cheesy, but they're just like so cute together. That it's like, I wish we could have had more of that in the movie, because they do such a good job.
No, that's fair. And so apparently Dennis Leary went on to talk about what would have happened with Spider-Man 3. And in this series, they actually would have, apparently, like, the villain, whoever they were going to pick, had this, like, formula where they were going to essentially raise Peter's, like, forgotten or, like, fallen foes and friends back to life. So you would have had Gwen and Captain Stacy come back, as well as Uncle Ben. So kind of, like, what do you guys think about that?
I don't know. I mean, like, it's interesting, but I don't, where would you go with that? Like, is it to haunt him? Is it to, because I guess one way I think you could do it is like kind of like the House of M storyline where Peter, wakes up, Gwen Stacy never died. He marries her. Uncle Ben never died. He has this life that like things that he always wanted, but then you kind of realize it's a bit of a trap. And so maybe if they went like a route like that, that'd be interesting, but I don't know what else they were planning with it. So
sad. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that there's like, you know, and obviously with this film too, they were trying to bounce off with, you know, Sinister Six kind of, you got a little bit of Sinister Six Easter eggs in here. But I mean, I feel like the Sinister Six aspect of it, especially after Harry is detained in Ravencroft, it makes the film feel kind of even busier. Like the entire time, it just kind of felt like one big ad for like the Spider-Man universe. Am I alone in thinking that?
I agree. And it's like what, you know, what the MCU does is they have these Easter eggs and they have these things of, oh, we know what that is. And, you know, maybe they'll have it in the next movie. And that works for the MCU, but it doesn't work for, you know, to try and do that for every comic book franchise. And yeah, I mean, again, like, just it's too busy, too much stuff going on. They just need to focus on some of these more interesting ideas and not worry about trying to get people invested in so that they could have an amazing Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely is a bit of a advertisement for the other stuff. When you look at the MCU, you look at, like, obviously they always are going to be teasing their next movies, but they usually are pretty still central. Like, you can still go into an MCU film, and if you haven't seen every movie in it, still get the point across and understand what was happening. But it's still, like, with this movie though, I feel like they cram way too much into it that it probably definitely suffers because of it.
Like, I feel like that the ending scene where he's kind of like the man in black is kind of walking through, like, instead of being the transitional scene between, you know, Peter kind of going through his depression after Gwen's loss, death, to the Rhino and the Rhino's end sequence, like, that would have been a perfect post-credit scene because it's teasing for what's to come. It just feels like a scene that's so out of place, and when you sit down and kind of do it, but then at the same time, you can't, that scene can't work, or the Rhino scene can't work without that scene prior, because you have to know that scene's where they get the Rhino gear from,
right? So, yeah, so I mean, I agree with that. I think they did do that a little bit too much, and that the movie definitely suffers because of it.
Yeah. All right, so this is what we're going to do is, if you guys have seen Amazing Spider-Man 2, what did you guys think of it? Make sure that you guys comment below wherever you guys listen to podcasts. Hit us up on social media. We'll give that here in just a couple minutes. But on a rating scale from 1 to 5, what would you give The Amazing Spider-Man 2? I'm going to start with our new guest. Tim, what would you give The Amazing Spider-Man 2?
I would give it a 2.5, which I believe on Thompson's scale is a Ben Affleck. So
that's like an in-between Ben Affleck, Val Kilmer. So,
okay, yeah.
But yeah.
That's exactly what.
What about you, Thomas?
So I would give this a 3. And on my, it'd be Ben Affleck on my rating scale. Like I said at the top of the show, there's some stuff I really like about it. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that aren't. And I think, like, obviously to me, there's scenes that sound like they probably work better for me than they do for maybe you guys. But I actually enjoy watching this movie. I think The Amazing Spider-Man 1 is a better movie, but I enjoy watching this movie more than that one. I think there's a lot of entertainment value to this film that I enjoy about it. And like I mentioned, I actually really like the Hans Zimmer score. To me, it really captures kind of the mood, the tone of the film really well. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess that's where I'll end it. But so it's a 3 out of 5 for me.
So I'm actually going to go a little bit around the same area for you guys, and I'm actually going to say that out of all of this, I'm actually going to go and with a 2, because I feel like there's a lot here that I appreciate. There's a lot of rewatchability factors here that this film does possess, but at the same time, it's just so busy, and there's a lot of these story arcs that I feel like I would have liked to see kind of pulled out. Like when I talked about Batman and Robin with you on your show, you know, I talked about if you would have taken out, you know, storylines 2 through 5 and just focused on maybe 1 and 6, you would have had a better film. I feel like Amazing Spider-Man 2, you definitely could have had the same thing kind of going on here if you would have had one central villain, maybe the cameo from the Rhino in the beginning, but kind of took out some of the stuff that, you know, because at any given time, there's probably like 6 or 7 storylines throughout the course of this. Feels like someone took the concept for a Netflix show and just kind of crammed it together. So it's filled with some great action sequences, but again, a 2 out of 5.
Well, and they were going to throw Mary Jane in there too.
Yes. And
yeah. Oh man.
So that's actually going to give us a grand total between the three of us of a 2 out of 5 for Amazing Spider-Man 2. But, as we're winding down, Tim, do you have anything that you plug, man? Do you do like a podcast or a YouTube channel?
No, I just, like I say on Thompson's podcast, if you just friend me on Facebook, I talk about nerd stuff a lot and it's fun.
Word. All right. Yeah. Where can people find you online, Thomas?
You can find us at superheromoviecast.podbean.com. You can find us on Facebook at Super Movie Cast, on Instagram. I need to be more active on my social media, but you can definitely, if you reach out to me, I will respond. That's how Tim and I became friends. He Facebook messaged me through my podcast Facebook, and we became friends. And so definitely reach out. I love talking to people listening. If you want to just chat superheroes, you want to talk more deeper stuff like mental health. I am a therapist as well, so I'm always down to chat about pretty much everything. So, yeah, that's where you can find me.
All right. You guys can find us everywhere. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and iTunes. I blanked there for a second. Wherever you guys listen to podcasts. And if you guys like what we stand for, consider giving us a 5-star written review on iTunes. And if you guys want to help us get mental health resources into people's hands, consider being a patron as well by going to patreon.com/victimsandvillains. Till next time, remember to keep talking nerd, talking hope, speaking nothing else. And if there's a rhino, get out of the way.
Culture. Artist owned, fan supported.